A piece of chocolate can be a holy wafer of comfort. It can bring pleasure and comfort to our lives that we deserve, that is wonderful. But shoving an entire candy bar in our mouths has nothing to do at all with comfort or pleasure. It's numbing.
That's Brené Brown. And this is the Depression Detox Show. Hello! And welcome back to the Depression Detox Show, where we share ideas and stories to help you live a happier life. I am your host, Malik Josephs. Happy Wednesday. I am grateful for you tuning in with me today as we have New York Times bestselling author, college professor, and one of the most sought out speakers, who is most notably known for her work as a shame researcher. We have Brené Brown back on the show to discuss a topic that I don't think we've ever covered on this show before. So I'm really excited for you to hear this one, because I think that it's a topic that a large majority of us may struggle with. I know that when I was listening to this episode several times over, I was raising my hand and incessantly nodding my head in agreement. So I hope that you really enjoy this one with Brené Brown. Enjoy.
The last one is numbing. Numbing as a shield. I said this in the first session. We are the most obese, in debt, addicted, and medicated adult cohort in human history. We numb. We just numb. And what's interesting is when I talk about this, people push away a little bit and say, I don't have any addiction issues. And that could be very true for a small percentage of us. That could probably be true. But let me tell you this. Addiction is compulsive and chronic numbing. There are not enough people struggling with addiction to make up for the fact that we are the most obese, in debt, medicated, and addicted adults in human history. What that means is that between the group of people who are struggling legitimately with addiction and healthy, there are a whole bunch of us numbing. And it is a real struggle, I think, because it is changing our lives. It is moving us away from wholeheartedness, for sure. It's a way that we hide from vulnerability, but there's really not very much you can do about it. Because if you're numbing and it's getting in the way of wholeheartedness, and you say, well, I need some help with this, and you show up at most traditional 12-step groups, you're not gonna be drunk enough or a drug addict enough. Or if you say, hey, you know, you go to some meetings, 12-step meetings, and you say, hey, I'm here because I really numb out on television and it's really starting to interfere with my life, they're going to say, you're in the wrong place. You know, and so my question always, and I do a lot of addiction work. So I'm a big fan of 12 steps. I've been sober for 16 years. But there are a whole bunch of people that need a seat at a table to have this discussion that don't have a seat at the table. Does that make sense? And myself included. I mean, I quit drinking and smoking the day I finished my master's degree in social work, only because I had done a genogram. And for those of y'all who don't know what a genogram is, it's like a family map that you do in graduate school. And, you know, you do it on your own family to learn how to do it on people who are going to soon be your clients. So I had done a family genogram. And when I'd gone to my parents to say, tell me about this family history, it was like shake the family tree and all the alcoholics fall out. I couldn't believe it because I didn't grow up seeing parents who drank. And I knew there was something going on a little bit, but I didn't really know the extent of it. And so my genogram, coupled with the fact that not so much when I was in graduate school, but certainly as an undergrad in my early 20s, I was a very wild party girl. I know that's super hard to imagine. I'm sure it's hard for you to imagine me with big hair and a cigarette hanging out of my mouth. Picture it, if you will. That scared me. And so coupled with my student loans, this is not a good combination. And I just spent like 5-6 years in school trying to become self-actualized. And then this is my family history. This is my propensity. And so I quit. I woke up the morning after graduate school, after our party, hungover. I did. And said, I got to quit drinking. I should quit drinking. And then what I realized, and to this day it's true, I've missed drinking 2 or 3 times since I quit. I miss smoking every single day. And I think I quit both because I think for me, the truth was I can't drink and not smoke. It's like beer, cigarette. But what was interesting is when I went into this 12-step, I went to some 12-step meetings and I did, I figured out what the rules were. And so I found a sponsor the first day and we went out to dinner and she's like, well, tell me about your life. And I told her about my life and she went, I don't think you belong in AA. And I was like, well, where do you think I should go? Maybe I go OA, maybe go to CODA, maybe go to, I don't know, I don't do drugs. I've never done drugs. I could sneak in. where do I go? And she said, I don't know. She said, you have the poo-poo platter of addictions, a little bit in every compartment. You just kind of turn it around. And I said, well, so what do I do? And she said, here's what I think you should do. You should quit smoking, drinking, getting involved in your family's business, and you should eat really healthy. Like, are you shitting me? She goes, no, I think it'd be best if you just did all that immediately. It's like, but I have so much time on my hands. I'm like, okay. And so that's what I tried to do. But the reason I'm sharing this story with you is because I think, and it's been great, and I'll be honest with you, I think I owe my career, my marriage, and I'm proud of the way that we parent our kids and my parenting abilities to the fact that I don't drink. And not because I don't drink, but because it forced me to really think about vulnerability. And what was interesting is one of the reasons that the spiritual awakening breakdown happened for me is because about a month, I didn't tell you this in the earlier session, about a month before I did that data collection and that data analysis, I had given up sugar and flour. And so for me, I had, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't eat sugar and flour anymore, I really stay boundaried with my family, even though I'm super good at dispensing helpful advice. and then all this research starts coming up. And I remember going to Diana and saying, I am like a turtle without a shell in a briar patch. And I'm going to have to do something. And she said, you are doing something. And I said, what am I doing? She said, have you thought about work recently? And what I realized is that I was working 60, 70 hours a week, which I had never done till I gave up sugar and flour. It was like, I just went from one thing to the next, one numbing thing to the next. And I was like, oh my God. So then I started to rein that back in and then I really felt exposed. And I told her, this is not gonna work. I'm having debilitating anxiety attacks for the first time in my life. Like I'd get so dizzy, I'd almost lose my balance. I'm like, I can't do this. I'm gonna have to figure out a way. I can't be a turtle without a shell and a briar patch. I need a shell. What kind of shell? You got some meds? What do you have for me? Give me a shell. Give me like a therapist sanctified, whatever shell. Give me a shell. She's like, well, everybody loves a smart therapist. I've got an idea. And I was like, what's the idea? She goes, why don't you get out of the briar patch? I was like, what do you mean? And she said, why don't you stop living the way you're living? Why don't you get out of the briar patch? And then you'll be super happy without your shell. You'd be comfortable, lightweight, move around, nimble. I was like, literally, this is exactly what I look like. I don't even know what to say right now. I was like, huh? She goes, you're getting poked and hurt all the time, not because you don't have a shell, but because you're living in a briar patch. Like that was incredibly profound to me. I was like, oh, got it. And what I've realized in doing the research was that I don't know if I have any compulsive or chronic behaviors. I don't really know. I don't know that I do. I don't know that I don't. But what I do know is if they had a meeting where you could show up and say, hi, I'm Brené, and vulnerability is excruciating for me, and I like to numb out to avoid it, that I could be president of that club. How many of you could join that club? Right, so hands across the room. And so we have to think about numbing as a really serious issue, even if we don't compulsively and chronically use some substance, if we just numb. And, you know, and people debate all the time with me about this, and they'll say, you know, and especially people who are like, you know, I've been off drugs for 15 years. Please don't tell me that's the same as playing too much. Is it World of Warcraft? Is that a name of something? Like a multi-user game? Yeah, please don't tell me that that's the same. Let me tell you a story about a guy whose wife I interviewed, who had a daughter who was 2 and had leukemia. And he got put on probation at work for playing video games at work. Then he got fired for playing video games at work. Then, when I interviewed her, they were putting their daughter's chemotherapy on MasterCard because she stayed at home and she didn't have a job and they lost their insurance. So this whole idea, this is a great place to talk about this issue, this whole idea of pitting addictions, what's worse, what's real, what's chronic, is just bullshit. You know, it's this whole idea of ranking compassion and ranking severity. You know, if you're not fully engaged in your life because you're on Facebook for 6 hours a day and you dread hearing your partner pull up in the driveway because you have to log off of your fake life and log back into your real life, that's problematic. And we have to talk about numbing. And we have to talk about the line between numbing and comfort. Jennifer Loudon, who's a good friend of mine who really writes about comfort, she says, you know, a piece of chocolate can be a holy wafer of comfort. It can bring pleasure and comfort to our lives that we deserve, that is wonderful. But shoving an entire candy bar in our mouths before we have to go in and get our evaluation from our boss has nothing to do at all with comfort or pleasure. It's numbing. You know, and so I think one of the biggest shields that we carry around is numbing. We are not fully present. And there are a lot of ways outside of the list of traditional addiction issues, drugs, alcohol, sex, money, codependence. There are a lot of things that we can do to numb that are equally as dangerous. Future child's fall play, and instead of watching, you're running your fantasy football numbers. You are not present, and that is hurtful behavior. And just because there's not a meeting for it and you can get away with it doesn't mean it's not changing the quality of your life, right? And we all do it. I know. I can look up sometimes and be like, hour 13 on Twitter. I'm like, you know, what's going on? What am I avoiding? What am I not doing? For me, a great distinction between comfort and numbing can be with television. I have 4 or 5 shows that I love, that I watch. Like, I am Downton Abbey. I am the face of Downton Abbey. So for me, comfort can really be taking a break from work and sitting down and watching a couple of episodes of Downton Abbey or The Good Wife or something I really love. But that feels very different than just doing this and surfing channels. God, please let there be like, you know, Footloose or something from the 80s that I can watch, you know. That's numbing. I'm getting no pleasure. When it's done, I feel guilty and I don't feel replenished. If I say, you know what, I'm watching Downton Abbey tonight. The house can burn down. Y'all are on self mode for tuck in. I'm watching this tonight. It is my time. It is comforting. I love it. That's important time. When it's done, I feel great. So we have to think when it comes to food and television and the internet, gossip, things that we use to avoid, email, things that we avoid, life.
Big thanks to Brené Brown for stopping by. I hope that you got a lot from today's episode. And if you'd like to learn more about her work, you can go to her website, brenebrown.com. Her Instagram and Twitter are both Brené Brown. Her most recent book is entitled Atlas of the Heart, Mapping Meaningful Connection and the Language of Human Experience. And I got today's clip from an audio program, which you can find on audible.com. And that's entitled The Power of Vulnerability, Teachings of Authenticity, Connection, and Courage. And I specifically got it from session number 4 at about the 33-minute mark. So you can check that out. And if you'd like to hear more talks with Brené, you can go to the show description or the show notes section and look at her previous episode section, where there'll be a list of all the past episodes that we've had or featured on the show, as well as all the links to everything that I just mentioned to connect more with her and her work. All right. When you get a chance, please follow the show, share it, or leave a rating and review on either Apple Podcast or Spotify Podcast. And lastly, also before you go, follow me on Instagram at Depression Detox Show to see 1 minute inspirational and motivational reels of all the speakers that we have featured on our show. All right. That is a wrap for me. As always, I appreciate you. I hope you have an amazing rest of your day, and I will see you back here tomorrow. So, until then, stay strong. Later.